Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. I'm the founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. And we're located in Pewaukee, just north of I-94 between Highway 164 and Highway F in the Ridgeview Corporate Park. And we really do welcome you to stop in and see our new digs. They're really great. It looks beautiful in the winter and it looks beautiful in the summer. We've been watching the turkeys chase each other around and it's been really kind of cute. We're also in the village of Whitefish Bay. We're in the Equitable Bank building across from Winkies. And we're very happy, especially this winter, to be able to service our clients in Bonita Springs, Florida. If you'd like to put a voice with a face, go to ellenbecker.com and you can look up a little bit more on Ellenbecker Investment Group as well. Today is really a fun show for me because I always say they're fun, don't I? But it really is because it's very near and dear to my heart. As an entrepreneur and working in three different brokerage firms, a bank, working in different places, sort of stood back and thought, you know, I think I can do this and do it a little bit differently. And as I was having the opportunity to read my guest book, Dan Adams, who's the author of Business Builders, How to Become an Admired and Trusted Corporate Leader, it was really kind of fun because I saw myself in it. And I saw myself in a lot of these companies that I work for, the brokerage firms and the bank, and I saw them in there too. And it was really kind of fun because after I read the book, and I know that Dan's going to talk to you about what is a remodeler, what is a decorator, and what is a realtor, and how to really be a builder within your business. I could actually, for one of the first times, know why I left, why I wasn't happy, and why I had to do something on my own. So, Dan, I want to welcome you to our show.
Well, thank you, Karen. Thanks for having me over.
And thank you very much for sending me your book. I've enjoyed it. And it's really interesting. And maybe you could just start out by telling my guests how you started, where you are. And I should have mentioned that you're the president of the AIM Institute. And you have a huge amount of things that you've accomplished over your lifetime. And one of them is working with professionals and helping them to find their niche and to be successful. And one of the things you said in the book that I hadn't thought about as well is that you can, if you really want to be an entrepreneur, and when I teach at schools very often, I'll ask people, how many people want to run their own business? And these young kids, you know, and juniors and sophomores, they raise their hands. They all want to be entrepreneurs. But the reality is that most of them end up working for someone else.
Yeah, that's right.
One of the things that you said in your book was that you can be an entrepreneur in a corporation.
Yes, exactly. You can be
an
entrepreneur.
And I love that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and that's kind of how I guess I got started. You know, I worked inside of large corporations, background chemical engineering, and went over to the dark side and went into marketing for a while. And I was there for like 29 years. And I was working for especially one leader in particular who I started calling a builder, a Dutchman. And when I say builder, somebody who really drives growth by understanding customer needs and meeting them with innovation, services, products, and so forth. This guy was really good. And then we got bought. And the company that was buying us, I could tell they were not builders. And I'm thinking, this isn't good. So I went to my boss and said, would you please get me fired? Because, you know, I've been there for so long. And this is when this is like 19 years ago. They had really good severance packages back then. So he finally got me fired. It took a while, actually. I felt good. It wasn't that easy. Finally got fired and started up the AIM Institute. And so I kind of, in the back of my mind, remembered that builder concept. But then as I started dealing, our company, we train very large companies in how to do innovation. And as I thought about it, some of the companies were doing well that we were working with, some weren't. And I realized it was the builder-led companies that were really succeeding. And so that's what caused me just this last year to write Business Builders. But it really started by working for a builder, somebody like you, who just naturally does these things. And I found out not everybody does.
You know, it's funny because, like I said in the very beginning, I looked at these different people that I worked for, and I could identify them immediately, and they were not builders. And if you're a builder and you're working under that type of an individual, it's very hard to be happy.
But yes, exactly. And that's one of the big lessons that I think a lot of executives, this is kind of aimed at a lot of corporate America, it doesn't have to be, but one of the lessons I think they fail to understand is if you have somebody who could be a builder, they're coming up through the ranks, and you put them underneath a decorator, you're going to maybe chase them out of your company. And maybe I should explain those roles, what I mean by that, right?
Yes.
So the builder is somebody, okay, every company that you can think of was founded by a builder. It's somebody who said, we're going to build an organization by understanding, finding out what the needs are of customers, and we're going to meet those needs. So every company on the planet was started by a builder. Now, as time goes on, you know, we got into this mode of, oh, I got to hit the quarterly financial results, and it's all about looking good to Wall Street. So a lot of companies today are led by decorators. There are others who are led by remodelers, and they're doing good work. It's productivity, it's quality, but they're not building anything new. So after a while, you run out of steam. You kind of hit diminishing returns. And then there's a fourth group that's remodelers, and these are folks who just do mergers and acquisitions. Now, I'm oversimplifying it. Every leader is a combination of these things, but we did some research and we asked people, what was their primary passion? Now, we didn't use terms like decorators in the survey because how many people are going to say, sign me up for a decorator, right? But we put in, you know, things like my main passion is presenting good financial results and, you know, all that. So what we found was about 50% of corporate business leaders today see themselves as a business builder, and only one third of their subordinates see their leaders as business builders. So here we have every corporation was started by a builder, and only between one third and one half of them are still led by builders. That's where we're at today. And so if you get a severe decorator in top, and all they're thinking about is the quarterly financial reports, they're really not building for the future. They're not going to grow as fast. Our research also showed that business builder-led companies are growing faster than the other types. And as we were saying earlier, you're going to drive out some of your best future builders if you have this decorator mentality.
You know, I read a statistic quite a while ago where they were saying that so often when individuals are promoted to another division or to another area within a company, that they come from an area where they are absolutely successful. They have done such a good job, and they take that person and put them into a different area. And it was overwhelmingly the statistic that they were not successful because they were trying to do what they were doing in that piece of business and duplicating it. And that's not what you can do. You can't just go and so if you're successful, just thinking you're going to go to a whole other division or something doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be successful there.
Exactly. Yeah, right. You have to understand the new terrain and what needs to be done. And I think sometimes executives, as they go up through the ranks, you know, they feel pretty good about themselves and they're smart people. There's no doubt about it. But maybe they've stopped learning. Maybe they've stopped being open to seeing what is my new situation and they pull out the same bag of tools that were okay in the last job. But to your point, they're not the right tools anymore for this new job.
What do you think is the biggest hurdle that business owners have to overcome when they're doing succession planning? Because what you're really talking about, if from my terminology, so my daughter took over my business a little over 10 years ago, mm-hmm. and she's a builder, and she's got a lot of qualities about detail. I'm not a great detail person. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of mm-hmm. that imagination out there and looking mm-hmm. for opportunities. But what do you think is the hurdle in this? Because there are so many people that want to sell their business now, but they don't have the right people in place. And I think you're talking about that, that a lot of times a family will just say, well, my son's going to take over. I was blessed that my daughter was amazing. And I always say nobody wants anybody to change their baby's clothes. You know,
right, exactly.
So, you know, so they bring in somebody and it's not the right person. And so many businesses fail when they get to that second or rarely ever to a third generation. Is that has something to do with who they're putting in place?
I think it absolutely does. And we can almost think about this in a couple of different scenarios. I mean, my business I've got now, I'm going to have to think about that at some point. And then we're also, let's talk about that. And let's talk about the large corporations. So I think when we're looking at a, you know, family-run business, I think we may be unrealistic to figure that we're going to get somebody who's exactly like the founder that does all of the same things they do. They're going to have a different bundle of strengths. I think they have to have the same builder mentality, but that successor may need to surround themselves with different people with different skills to complement. You may be able to do like three or four things really well, and your successor might do one or two well, but we have to know what is missing so they can have some colleagues come along at the C level and support them. Now, if we look at that on a corporate level, the problem just gets much, much more severe because what we see in many corporations is you have middle-level managers who are very good at managing up. They look good. But they're really bad at managing down their organizations. They don't invest in their people. They don't build for the future. In fact, some of them, they'll get in a business, and what they'll do is they'll carve it out. They'll look good in the short term, make sure all the short-term decisions, but they don't invest in the long term. They get promoted, and they can almost like a frog leaping from one lily pad to another. They just kind of keep jumping, and the poor lily pad sunk after they left the thing, right? So in that situation, what we recommend is that the corporation does 360 evaluations. So that middle-level management is not just getting reevaluated by their boss, but by their colleagues and, importantly, by their subordinates. And if you get some ratings saying this boss is kind of eating our seed corn for the future, you need to get that person out of there because they're going to chase away a lot of really high-potential subordinates. The other aspect in the corporate session, I learned one of the people I interviewed, Tom Williams at Parker Hannifin, he said, Dan, we don't just get worried about who the successors are. We look at our successors' successors. So they're going too deep in the organization, the corporation. And that kind of prevents a problem you mentioned earlier where people jump in and go, what am I doing? This almost ensures you're having people grow up with the business because of the succession to the succession. So those are some of the things I think to think about in that kind of planning.
My guest today is Dan Adams. He's the president of the AIM Institute. He's also the author of a great Business Builders, How to Become an Admired and Trusted Corporate Leader. And I really enjoyed the book. And I just want to say that, you know, if you've got a kid graduating, and we'll talk about it in the next segment, if you've got a kid who's graduating from college, I was very surprised to see who this book is for. And it's for a lot of people, but one of them is for your college student who maybe needs a little bit of direction. But as they're planting their feet on the ground and as they're trying to figure out what's next, to have a guide like this that can help them to determine who they are and fit into that position that is really they're passionate about, and then work is at work. And with that, we'll be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. My guest today is author Dan Adams, as well as the president of the AIM Institute, where they really do help individuals to find their niche and to become leaders in corporations and to understand how to do that. I think so often now, my dad would always say to me, work hard, work hard. All you got to do is work hard. And he'd say things to me like, it's who you know, it's who you know. And what I discovered that working hard isn't the only thing. It's working hard in the direction that you want to go. And it's not who you know, it's who knows what you know. That's really important. And so as these kids are coming out of college, Dan, let's talk about who this book is for and who is going to be able to really gain from the knowledge that you've shared.
Yeah. So whether they're going to be an entrepreneur, start their own business, or whether they join a corporation, I think if they could be thinking about the builder mentality, and that mentality is the same as every founder of every company, which is, what does the market want? What do the customers need that's not being met today? And how can I deliver that? Oftentimes with innovation, it really all starts there. We call it market-facing innovation. It's the root of all growth. The only thing that will lead to growth that's sustainable is that. So that's what I would encourage them to do. I could get in a little trouble on this one. A lot of people, when they get out of college, go, I'm going to go into finance. And there's a really good book called Makers and Takers. And this will probably offend some people, but the author, I think, has it right. What she says is that that finance used to work for business, now business works for finance. And what she was saying was, it used to be that finance was there to support business, but it was all about building your business, growing, delivering value to customers. Now, in her book, she has some frightening statistics, but a lot of our economy is finance, and it's moving money around in some ways. Useful function, absolutely. But I would actually encourage people getting a start to really think about, how can I learn some skills? It could be engineering, it could be something, anything else, where I can really deliver value, bring some real value to customers. And then when you get in a corporation, take that business builder mentality and really try to understand customer needs and then deliver innovation to them. That to me is, well, it's what, as I say, all founders did, and it still works today.
So in terms of your book, anybody can use this book, even if they're working within a business.
Yes.
And they're not wanting to start a business. What if they're not a builder? How do they stay in their lane and be successful in their lane?
Excellent point. Thank you for that. You know, not everybody is a builder, and that's perfectly fine. In fact, if you want to know if you're a builder, we have a website called areyouabusinessbuilder.com. You can go out, you can answer 20 questions, okay? And it's not at all a bad thing to be somebody who is really interested in finances, who would be more of a decorator, somebody who is really good at productivity and quality, that's more of a remodeler, somebody who's good at mergers and acquisition. Let's take a corporation for a minute. You need all those functions. You need people in investor relations, looking good to Wall Street. You need people looking over your productivity and your quality. You need people doing M&A. So if you are not a builder, what I would encourage you to do is get in an organization that is led by a builder and support them. You're going to have a great ride if you do that. Now, why, if you're a decorator, maybe you should go in an organization led by a decorator. I would actually not encourage you to do that. When you're in a decorator-led organization, they have these layoffs, cutbacks, back and forth, travel bans, cost and freezes. It's very demoralizing to be in a company that's not led by a builder. But you don't have to all be builders in a builder-led company.
That really sounds great. And I think about so many people that are in jobs that they're really not happy. And yeah. So what if they're looking at this and they say to themselves, I like the products, I like the business, maybe I'd like to be a builder, or maybe I'd like to do it differently. What do you recommend for individuals so that they can change, or is there no way to change and you really have to look for something different?
There is. I mean, we all get to decide, you know, what really interests us. And sometimes we don't know what interests us until we try it. You know, I started in manufacturing as an engineer, and I thought I liked operations. And, you know, it wasn't until I had a chance to get into marketing, I thought, oh, that's what I really enjoy. So let's try a few different things, right? So let's just imagine, let's just take a corporation setting for a minute here. You're not in product management, you're not in marketing, you're not in the lab developing new products, but maybe you're in a different function. Maybe you are in a finance function. Well, that new product development project team needs some of your help to figure out a value calculator. Maybe you're in sales. Well, that team could use your help in setting up customer interviews to understand their needs. So what I would do if you are, I'm just going to use a corporation for an example here. If you're in a corporation and you want to find out if you would enjoy the building trade, you know, building something of value for customers, then find out who is doing new product development in your company and ask them if they need some help on their teams. Because they'll have these project teams that are going out to markets and understanding needs. And they're always looking for some extra set of hands. And if you're there and you're helping them and you like it, then you just do more and more of that until pretty soon, poof, that's your job.
I have a thought as you were talking, but I think what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back. And my thought is, give you a little bit of time to noodle on it, is that so often I'm sitting down with someone who's getting close to retirement. They have their own business. They're looking, well, do I have enough money to retire? What if I sell my business? Well, you know, I really get a lot of perks out of my business. I don't know if I really want to sell yet. But you know what I notice is that they've maybe lost that builder's attitude. They've started to get tired, maybe tired of the rat race. To me, that seems like a death sentence to the company. And with that, we'll be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. I'm the founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. And please go to our webpage, ellenbecker.com, for more details. My guest today, and oh, I'm having so much fun with this because I can see myself in this book and I can see my, I can see where I've been working in different places, starting my own business, and now looking at the idea of, do I want to retire? What does that look like? And I'm a builder. I'm a natural builder. It's just, I can't imagine being different. But, you know, you kind of get a little tired as time goes on. So my guest today, author Dan Adams, who did Business Builders, the question that I threw out is that so often I'm working with clients and it makes money sense for them to maybe continue working in their business. And all the information is in their head, but they're getting a little bit tired, a little bit leery. And I can see the zip and the, you know, the zest maybe not there for their business. And they're just kind of coasting. That seems to be a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It may be time to do something different, you know, when you get there. I'll give you a quick example. There was a chief technology officer of a very large $20 billion company. And one of the group presidents said to him, yeah, I don't really believe in innovation. Now, this is to the chief technology officer, right? What do you mean you don't believe in innovation? And the guy goes, well, I'm going to retire in a couple of years, so anything we do now is really not going to help me. And so he had lost, I know, he at least used his outside voice. I mean, how many people are using their inside voice and they're just coasting along and they're getting highly compensated by their company and they're sending it down the tubes because they're not building for the future. So my message in the book is, as a leader, you don't look at your retirement as the finish line. Instead, you're not crossing a finish line, you're passing a baton. Who are you passing that baton on? You are a builder. Your role, your job is to make this thing keep on going. So look at that succession planning. If you're getting too tired, you need to get somebody else in the roles that maybe you don't want to do anymore. Maybe there are, for you, and I'm sure for me as well, Karen, there's some things that I don't want to do as much anymore, and there's some things I really enjoy doing. So my advice would be find the things that you do want to do. If you can do it within the company, great. Get somebody else doing the other, teach them how to do it. If that's not a possibility because you have to retire from a corporation, then find a startup that needs help. Find a nonprofit that's helping poverty-stricken populations. Find students that you can teach. Find something that you can keep that passion going. It doesn't have to be the same passion you had 10 years ago.
You know, that is really true. And as I said, I'm so blessed that my daughter, Julie, could step into that role. And she worked with me all the way through college, and she used to pass out flyers when she was young. They'd go on their bicycle and put them in mailboxes, which I didn't know was illegal, but it's too late to prosecute me. But, you know, they watched me build, and all of my kids have turned into entrepreneurs with their own businesses. And it's really fun, but being a builder and having all that responsibility can also be tiring, exhausting. And, you know, they say it's pretty lonely at the top. And so mm-hmm. I think that it is really important if you want that business to succeed and to continue to grow, which is why we started them, is to bring those people in to support you. And I said to myself, I'm going to get rid of all the fluff. I'm only going to do what I'm really, really good at. And what a great position to be in at our age, to be able to do the things that we love and still be able to support our business. And I think one of the other things is to mentor people to come up, to mentor people. Exactly. And in so many ways, you're mentoring with this book.
Well, that's right. And I think that that's one of the joys is passing along these skills. You know, I saw some really interesting research. I find this very encouraging. You may as well. Do you know which decade of our lives we are the most productive? Think of all the decades of our lives. Which one's most productive? It's actually our 60s. That's the most productive. The second most productive time in our lives is our 70s. And the third most is our 50s. So, you know, there's a lot that we can accomplish. I think there's a little false thinking where people go, oh, I got a few more years, I'm going to retire, I'm going to go on the golf course. I don't think that's a great recipe for many people. I think for most, it's like, well, maybe I'll do something different, but what do I really enjoy doing? And that's what we should direct our attention to.
Well, one of my sayings to my clients is, make sure that you always walk like you got a place to go.
I love that. That's great. I love that. I'm going to remember that one.
So when you're talking about many builders who initiate the business, they're really in the very beginning doing all of those different steps that you have.
Yeah, exactly.
And at some point they've got to let go.
Yeah, that's right. You know, this is the thing when you have somebody and start a company, could be Steve Jobs, doesn't matter. And at a certain point, there are other things that have to happen. And they do need to surround themselves with other people. Then when you get to the end of your career, it's the same thing. There are certain things that you just don't have that love for anymore, that passion. And you need to kind of let go and hand those things on to the right people. But I think having the passion, let that burn the whole time through, is probably the goal for us.
So when you worked with these corporations, and I looked at in the book, you did a lot of research. I mean, this isn't just your idea. You've been working with a lot of companies and corporations when all of a sudden you were able to sort of put the pieces together to create the puzzle. What were some of the things that you discovered over and above this that you can align with successful people? And that doesn't necessarily mean successful people that own a business, that are building a business, but just in generality, the people that are happiest at work.
Yeah, well, so there's a couple of things. I do think this applies to everybody in many different situations. But the surprise in the research was this. I'm going to apply this first to corporations, then we'll bring it to the rest of us. The surprise was many companies could be much, much more successful in the way they grow profitably and so forth, simply by stopping some bad behaviors. And so there are actually six bad behaviors in there that are self-inflicted that are slowing down a lot of corporations. But many of them apply to us as well. The first one is the wrong goal. Now, in the case of a corporation, over 30%, I think it was 38% of public corporations found that felt that the number one goal was to maximize shareholder wealth. And that's a bad idea. It's been discredited. Jack Welch is a good example of somebody who built stockholder value for 20 years at this great sacrifice to many other elements of the health of the business. And 20 years later, it still hasn't even reached a third of the value he pumped it up to. So there's a lot of reasons that that's a bad goal. So bring that back to our lives. What is our real goal? What are we going? If we don't have the right goal, you know, we're in trouble. Another one, though, that I think applies universally is the time horizon. So what we found was, by the way, companies who set up stockholder value as their primary goal, they were not growing nearly as fast as those who set up the goal of innovating for customers, basically building. Another one was time horizon. When a company has a very short time horizon, they are extremely limited in what they can accomplish. So by far, the most successful companies had a much longer time horizon. They built capabilities over the long haul. And yeah, they wanted to get results, but they also had a lot of investment in building capabilities over the long haul. That applies to all of us, right? You know, what are we building for the long term? You know, are we reading? Are we learning? Are we exercising? Are we eating well? Are we building healthy relations? All those things. You know, it's if it's all about today, we're going to have the same problem as those short-term oriented corporations. So I think there's some lessons that apply from the book out of the corporate world into everyday life.
When you, I guess I wonder, you did a little bit of it in the beginning, Dan, but I'm just looking at our time here. I think we're going to take a quick break again. And when we come back, so I don't have to interrupt you, let's talk a little bit about if there's people in the audience saying, man, he's talking about me. I used to be a builder. Or he's talking, you know, I'm a decorator and I'm in this lead seat. Maybe I'm not the one that should be here. Help us identify how you can help us or what people need to do. And with that, we'll be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbeck. I'm the founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. And I'm interviewing Dan Adams. He's written a really great book. And I have to tell you, it's a nice thin book. It's easy to read. It's laid out really great. You can just kind of pick up a chapter and think about it. It's not something that you have to tear through for the cover to cover right away. Actually, it's very nice to just think about. And so I suggest it. We've got a lot of kids graduating, got Father's Day, got always something being celebrated. So, and women and men, I would say, this is a great, great book. Dan, what does somebody do if they're listening to you right now and they go, oh my gosh, I'm in this, I fought for this job, I've got this job. And based on what he's saying, kind of predicting that I might not be successful in this job. I might not be the one suited for the job that I've taken on. What can somebody do and how can they alter that? Do they go to their boss and say, boy, I listen to Money Sense and I think you got me in the wrong place. You know, what does somebody do?
Well, you know, if they're not like the CEO, you know, there's probably a lot of options for them. It's a little bit tougher if you are the CEO and you want to stay the CEO, right?
Yes.
There's not a lot of other places to go. But here's the good news. Let's say you are a decorator at heart. You may have this wonderful ability to understand finances. You might be a wonderful investor relations person that can go to Wall Street or work with the banks. We need those people. So we need, if all we have was builders in the company, we'd be in trouble. We need these other functions as well. Let's say you're a remodeler. I know a lot of people who are really good remodelers. And what do I mean by that? A remodeler is somebody who makes things better. Their mantra is continuous improvement. they can go into a factory and they can automate it. They can get rid of defects and do statistical process control. This is great stuff that needs to be done. You may be a realtor and your real passion is buying and selling. Well, that's great. We need somebody in our company who can do that. So if you're not right at the very tippy top of the company, I would say look for opportunities to take your passion and apply those. Now, here's the other thing to think about, though. You may be a builder, but maybe well disguised. In other words, you may be a decorator because you've been told the number one objective of business is to maximize shareholder wealth. And once you realize it, and we go into three reasons why that's not the case, you may go, huh, well, maybe I was chasing the wrong thing after all. And maybe you will get familiar with and develop a passion for building. We don't know. You may be a remodeler. And what's interesting about remodelers, they usually have very good intention. They really want to make things better. You know, it's not about them. And then maybe when they go, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I could improve the factory automation, but I could improve products for my customers and bring some new experience to them. They might like it better. So I guess the thing would be, maybe experiment a little bit, see if you've got some builder bones in you. And then if not, find another part of the company that you can do your real passionate work in.
You know, so many people are disappointed in where their careers landed. And yeah, they wish that they had made different choices. And was it Wooden that said, you can't win the race if you're not in it?
Yeah,
I think,
right.
You know, you can't win the race if you're not in it. And I think that a lot of times, sometimes comfortable is easier.
Yeah.
But for those people who are trying to build a career, I always would tell my kids, try everything and don't try and figure out, you know, what you want. Figure out what you don't want, and yeah, what you want will come to the surface. Because when you can go to work knowing that you have a purpose, you have a passion, work doesn't feel like work at all. And when you're working with a team, and I think somewhere in your book, you talked about the importance of that team and that team working together.
Well, I think that's a really good point, Karen. You know, it goes back to the goal. Remember, we talked about a company and having the wrong goal, stockholder wealth. Well, the same thing as individuals. If my goal as a young person, fresh out of college, is to make as much money as I can, that's going to disappoint me. If my goal is to really have an enriching career and work with a great team and feel like I'm contributing, that's really where the payoff is. I mean, look at all the Silicon Valley entrepreneurs. They have plenty of money just to retire and go and live on a desert island or tropical island somewhere. So if the only goal is to amass money and to just spend it, why aren't they doing it? Well, because they're getting some real enrichment out of contributing, about building something of value. And so I think that that's something that we should all be thinking about as well. And it's easy to just chase the dollar and be very disappointed after a while.
In the very first segment, you talked about AIM and your company and the AIM Institute. So if there's people out there that are wondering, I wonder if he could help me to identify some of these things. How do you work with individuals and businesses?
Yeah, well, here's the peculiar thing about it. Our main business is actually training people in innovation and understanding customer needs. So that's our main business. This ended up actually being a sideline for me. I was kind of crazy. I was getting a little frustrated dealing with some, we have some very large clients, multi-billion dollar companies. And some of them were succeeding with our methods. Some of them were not. And it was because of the leadership. So I thought to myself, I have a choice. I've seen other people like Dr. Deming and others near the end of their career. They got a little crotchety because American business leaders weren't listening to them. So I thought, I've got a choice. Either I could get crotchety, and I'm still holding on that as a possible, you know, avenue to pursue. But the other one is write a book and see if anybody will read it. So our main work is actually not about business builders. But listen, if there's some people who pick that book up and want to have a conversation, I'm just an email away and I'd love to connect with them.
Well, I was just thinking about this, and I don't know, I'll say it out there, and you just don't have to answer your phone or answer your email. But one of the things that I have loved is that on an occasion when I find a really great book and I share it with my office or I share it with friends, we love to call the author and pick the author's brain and get insight into where that thought might come from. And we have 8 or 10 people, and in our company, we've got 50 some people. And it's just, you know, it's a wonderful thing to meet the author, but to also get that personal insight as to why did you write the book and why do you feel that this is important?
Yeah. Yeah. We're on a long learning journey, aren't we? We can learn.
Yes.
We can learn a lot from our own mistakes, but we don't have time to make them all. So it's probably a good, it's a great approach you're taking to reach out to others. And I know I learned so much from others. It's very helpful.
And what do you love about what you do?
Well, what I love is I love training. This is the main thing that we do. So I'm doing workshops all the time, but I also coach a lot of teams. So, you know, a couple of days ago, I was working with a team in Italy that makes adhesives. And then we've got teams in Asia. So our clients are all over the world, and a French team that makes mirrors. It's just so much fun. So I'm learning about all these crazy businesses, but I'm helping them go and do interviews of their customers so they can make better wood adhesives and mirrors and whatever it is, or hydraulic cylinders. You just never know what it's going to be. So I'm always learning from them, but I have a chance to work with them, and I think they can learn from me. So what more could you ask for, right?
And I would guess, even though these people are in all different places in the world, that they're probably pretty much the same.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. They all have the same passion for wanting to do a good job. They want to learn. When we first start teaching them some of our methods for how to do interviews and ask questions, they stumble around a little bit, but then they work at it and they get really good at it. And their customers go, wow, you were listening to me. So it's very gratifying to get the feedback from them.
When you are talking to these individuals about going out there and being innovative in the sense that we're always looking for ways that we can provide more services to our clients.
Yeah.
To,
mm-hmm.
I want to say, sort of make it a one-stop shop. And if we don't have that, that we have created relationships with people who they can talk to, who I have vetted out to make sure that they treat our clients the way we do. But
yeah.
I was looking at your book, and when you talk about that, innovation wave, you had the quality wave, the productivity wave, and the innovation wave. And that was from 1970 to 2030. Does that mean that really, because of where we are in this world and it's changing so fast, that people have unlimited potential?
I do think they do. I mean, it's truly amazing. I was around when Dr. Deming introduced the quality wave. You know, he went over to Japan, taught Toyota, and they just went wild with cars that were actually reliable, right? Now, the quality and the productivity are things we really need to do. But the innovation is never going to stop. You reach a point of diminishing returns on productivity and quality. If you have a lights-out factory fully automated, what do you do next? Got zero defects, what do you do next? But innovation applies to top line. It's like delivering new value, coming up with new things. And you know what's wild is it's going faster and faster. This whole thing with AI, we're starting to include that in our software. It is unbelievable how effective this is. But so the pace of innovation, I think, is just going to pick up. It's starting fast and it's going to leave skid marks, Karen.
Well, when you say it's going to leave skin marks, does that mean it's going to leave a lot of people behind?
It will, I'm afraid. A lot of people will say, well, I'll wait a while. I mean, we've had this forever, right? The thing is, you know, 100 years ago, if you say, I'll wait till this plays out, it probably didn't affect your career. I am not at all confident that's the case anymore. I think if, especially if you're a young person, you're not that close to retirement, I think you need to stay on top of these things. I would also say, we talked earlier about counsel for young people. I would, just as we've been saying, think very seriously about what would you enjoy doing. But I would also think about what are the jobs that AI can take over and what are the jobs that will require humans to do. And that's a difficult exercise, but it's an important one. We'll probably be surprised at how many things will be taken over by AI that used to be well-respected professions in the past. A radiologist is a wonderful job, but if AI is already able to, you know, read the X-rays better than humans, well, do we need as many radiologists? That's the sort of thing we need to think
yes.
about.
That's an interesting concept. My guest today, and I've had so much fun, Dan, thank you so much, has written a wonderful book, and that is Business Builders. You can get it in all the bookstores, I'm assuming, and
actually, Amazon, just Amazon right now.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Amazon, and you can get it, as I said earlier, it's a great gift. And so, Dan, I appreciate it very much. And as always, I hope that I've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. You know the routine. Before we invest, before we plan, before we advise, we always listen. Have a really great weekend. Bye-bye.